Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Gentleman's Brawl's back with another update. And for today's episode, I've got a couple of different things that I'm going to be going through, and I want to make sure that I cover as much as I can. First, some slight changes to the podcast. I don't want to call them changes because they're not really fully changes, but they will change what the experience is going to be. The cadence will stay largely the same. But what I want to bring to attention is that now that I've gotten more groove on For the Love of Boxing, which is on YouTube, and for Basic Cryptonomics, which is on pretty much every major platform, including YouTube at this point, and I'm working to develop Gentleman's World. Gentleman's World made its successful debut on Anchor FM. Thanks to them for providing the hosting platform as we evaluate whether it's going to be a better fit, I think, than the prior platform. The prior platform worked very well. That was Substack, and I appreciate them for allowing me to host there. But I needed to take it to the next level without significant extra expense. Anchor.fm did a great job on that one, so I want to give a shout out to them. However, I started to get some more awareness about what I wanted the podcast to do and what I wanted it to be, and I still have my original vision for the podcast. And so we're clear. Gentleman's World was, I originated it based on the premise that there would always be more than one person because I wanted to have two people to bounce off of. And the other person that I was wanting to get on the show has not responded to the request, but that person is in a different generation than me and provides unique insights that I lack. So I felt that that would be entertaining for anybody listening to see the two different sides of a thing. Since that's not going to happen in the short term, and I'm not sure if that person has any interest at this point, I'm going to start introducing guests, which we never have had on the show, possibly on a weekly cadence. I have to play it and see how it goes. The plan is to have the first guest starting next week, and I believe we got him scheduled for Tuesday. So that episode will broadcast probably same day after I talk to him in the evening or afternoon in Pacific time zone. The guest that we've got scheduled, I'm very excited to talk to him because he brings a very unique insight in multiple facets. His coverage likely will be cross-posted on Basic Cryptonomics. So if you're also on that podcast, you'll probably hear him there as well because he has insight from a business financial perspective. I like his cadence. I like his communication. I like his style. He seems to be very excited to get on the show and just have a kind of a regular conversation about all things finance, valuation, etc. And you might, if you're coming from LinkedIn, like if that's how you found the podcast, you might find that there's some really good information that you weren't aware of that I could not have provided because I'm not in his line of business. And so that's the whole going forward strategy now is to we're working to identify some guests, come on the show, build a cadence of guests on the show. And I've extended the invitation now with this group. If somebody wants to be a permanent co-host, even if it's not every episode, but that they are recurrent. So we've built a structure where people can request to be a recurrent host on the show. Of course, those guests are going to have to be very specific because I have a very specific communication and cadence for the show today. So I want to maintain what we have and kind of the momentum that we got going. At the worst case, I do have another person who I've got in mind that would be a good candidate for the show. The challenge with that person, I believe, is going to be scheduling because they're doing a lot of things just to kind of survive right now, given the pandemic. And I don't want to be disruptive to everything that that person's got going on. However, if they're amenable and they're able to make it work, I'm open to having that person on the show by far. They're a very brilliant, very intuitive type person. That would be more on the stories side. So you've got three different things. The informational, where I have guests that come on that bring singular insight that I lack. You've got the stories, kind of like I've told, where if I get this person on the show, you'll hear a lot because this person's memory functions better than mine does, which is depressing, but I understand. And we can talk about some of the stuff that we never got a chance to talk about, but you get to hear it firsthand. And if you've heard some of my episodes about religion of self, you know that there's a lot of stories that I've never even told because I've said so. A lot of them come from my book, and the book is the only source of memory that I have, but there's even a lot of stuff I didn't put in the book. And talking to him, because I've known him pretty much since I was like 5 years old. There's a lot that he and I have never talked about for sure. And even people in his family that I'm aware of there's an opportunity there. There's also a couple of other folks that I'm talking to get them on the show. And the reason I'm telling you all this now is so you're aware that the, let's say, the cadence, kind of the messaging and the voice of the show, I'm working to evolve it into something. It's still going to maintain the same structure as informal conversation and stories, but I want to have different voices in play and an infrequent cadence. I don't want it to be every time necessarily, but I do want to have that separate voice that's there so you can hear a bump off. So just so you know, that will be coming. I'm working on it. Ideally starting this next coming Tuesday will be the first guest on the show. Depending on how that goes, then I may have that person back on the show because I do like his delivery. He has his own show, and we're going to do a preface where I introduce him, what he does, how he works. So if you're interested in kind of what he's talking about, you can go check him out as well, in addition to what we're talking about on the show. The other point I want to update, if you're not in the Basic Cryptonomics podcast or the For the Love of Boxing podcast, just to give you a sense of where my mind is today, For the Love of Boxing only exists on YouTube. It doesn't have an actual podcast like you're listening to here on your own podcast application or iTunes, Spotify. It doesn't exist there today. And I don't know that I ever will for multiple reasons. I could, but I'm not sure. I haven't decided. But it has arguably the most activity, the most people listening to episodes, the most people watching the shows. There's no video, but the most people interacting with it. It has arguably the most. I've got tens of thousands because there was an appetite for boxing discussion. And I know that people believe that MMA has kind of dominated the conversation, and to some degree it has, but MMA has never been able to usurp boxing from just the richness of the history. There's something appealing about the sweet science, and this is evident by the performance of that podcast. If you know anybody who has an interest in boxing still, or people who still watch boxing, and people who love to discuss boxing or hear people talk about boxing, feel free to steer them to the For the Love of Boxing podcast. Our site is cryptotalkradio.net is our parent site. From there, you can link to any of our podcasts, but I share that because it's occurred to me that there are more people out there that love the sport still, and they would love to hear people that are traditionalists in boxing still talk about it. So if you know people that are like that, they might have interest in that one, and let them know. It's all on YouTube, and they can listen, and we respond, comments, etc. Basic Cryptonomics is a whole different beast because while Basic Cryptonomics is jumping in popularity, it has more people that are recurrent people that listen to it, but not the number of listens. The reason there's a difference is when you have a number of people, and this is where I'm going with this with Gentleman's World. Gentleman's World never has had the level of growth as the other two. Basic Cryptonomics has always had more reliable numbers, like they're very predictable numbers of people that come in and listen and interact because cryptocurrency is a pretty predictable, reliable industry. However, Gentleman's World has been on the lower tier because I've not focused attention on it till now. And I do more episodes to talk about different things, but I have a lesser cadence on purpose because I understand I have to adjust my messaging ever slightly to get a wider audience. So because Basic Cryptonomics has taught me the predictability aspect and how that works, which is I record it every day, once a day minimum, and I publish those episodes, and then I distribute it through social media. And by and large now, the vast majority of visits from Basic Cryptonomics are coming from people that are finding it through search engines. So Gentleman's World now is taking on, now that I've moved it to Anchor FM, is taking on that same, let's say, onus, where it's being more accessed through search engines. I'm finding it through sites like, not sites, but services like Podcast Addict, which I didn't know about, but it came up on the stats that that's a source. Anchor directly, which means they're finding it through search. This means that I'm likely to have more people listening than I did before. They may not know what Gentleman's World is and what it's about and how the cadence works. They'll go back and listen to past episodes, but I want to make sure I take this episode, and here's where I'm coming with my story. Now that I've rethought the approach for the other two, and that learning, that exercise, that experience has given me the insight I needed in order to position Gentleman's World where I want it to go in preparation for having guests on the show. Now that I'm here, let me just summarize what my vision always was in singular form so you know, and then we'll get into a story because it ties together. when I started Gentleman's World, when I had the vision to start Gentleman's World, I initially leaped in thinking, okay, I've got this person. We're working together. I respect him greatly. I think he has good communication style. He's exciting to talk to. He's a musician like I am. He has what I want in the show as somebody to bounce off of. He's in a different generation, which means he has insight I lack. All of this was appealing to me. So I didn't initially know, first, how do I get this thing started? Because Gentleman's World was first. It was the first, but I never focused on it until I was able to get him on board. I had the conversation with him. He expressed kind of concerns because he has family and he has other things to think about, given the pandemic, no problem. I wasn't able to get him back. And so I said, okay, I still got to move forward because I have something I want to share. So I start the podcast and I start with singular episodes, and that's fine. I get some subscribers, not a great number, and that's okay. Gentleman's World is also on Spotify, and it's also on iTunes, and it's also on, I believe, Google Podcasts as well. So I did a little bit of broadening of it, and then, of course, search engines came along with, you know, it indexes and finds them. Then I've got the stories, and I've got hundreds of stories still yet to be told. However, the vision never changed. I still want to have guests on the show, ideally permanent co-host, but at minimum, I do want to have guests on the show so I can bounce off of them. But I'm very, let's say, picky about the style, the personality, the presentation, the communication of the person that comes on the show. I've talked to a lot of people who are great speakers. Some of them, that's what they do for a living, is motivational speaking. But I need a certain energy, because if you've heard me talk on past episodes, you can sense that I have a certain energy about me. There's nothing scripted about anything you hear. I'm talking straight off the cuff. I don't prep. I don't plan because it feels unnatural. I want you to feel like I'm talking straight to you, like I was in the room with you, and we're just having a conversation. To me, from a listener perspective, that's more appealing. Joe Rogan admitted that's what he does. He doesn't go in prepping. He doesn't go in with, he might have bullets, but he doesn't go in prepared or scripted or anything because he wants it to be a casual conversation. Jada Pinkett Smith with the Red Table Talk, same thing. There's a casual conversation flow. These are some of the most popular podcasts possible. And there's a reason. It's because that's what we believe the listeners really want. We don't want it to sound artificial. We don't want it to sound scripted. We don't want it to sound icy cold. So that's how I positioned it. But I needed to find guests who are similar to me. They know that it's coming in. It's a conversation between two people or three people or whatever. And it's laid back and there's no scripts. We might have an umbrella topic, but we're not going into deep roots about, okay, now I've seen podcasts that do this. You know, somebody sitting there and it's video. Somebody sitting there, they got their phone or their tablet, and then they go to the next question. What do you think about the da 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 da? And then the answer comes in, and the answer is heavily scripted, which means they prepared, which means they sent them the question so they could prepare, so they could read off a scripted answer. No, I never wanted that, because you, as the listener, you can sense when people have overprepared. And if you overprepared, how do you know you're getting the truth? It doesn't mean it's bad. But it's not, the appetite's different. The appetite, I believe, for listeners is that you want to see that people are chatting about something. Imagine you're in a room and you, let's say you had an opportunity to be in a room, and over on the right, you see, let's say, Samuel L. Jackson and Morgan Freeman and somebody else chatting. Let's say, I don't know, Hillary Clinton. I don't know. They're chatting about something. What's your first instinct? Your first instinct is to say, what are they talking about over there? Those three people, that's a very unique blend of people. I would love to be a fly on that wall to hear what they're actually talking about. Because you know that they're just talking off the cuff, but you're interested in the topic matter. And that conversation is going to go however it goes. Either they're going to be yelling at each other, or they're going to be cordial with each other, but the topic matter is going to be of interest to you, and you're going to want to listen in. Because it's a regular conversation you just stumbled across. To many of us that do this, we think that's the appeal of podcasts that's been lost, where many people now create podcasts that are heavily scripted because they feel they have to. And to his credit, Larry King was heavily scripted too. He really was. And he was one of the most popular to do it. The difference with the Larry King, I think, is that his scripting was really catered around stories. And he was able to do that because he had already the notoriety to get away with that. But when you're new, when you've never done it, or you're not well known, you kind of have to take a different approach to say, how do I appeal with people? How do I appeal to listeners to get them not only to continue listening, but also to share it with friends and family and say, hey, this is awesome. The consensus within certain of us in the podcast community is that it should feel natural. It should flow naturally. And there has to be a compatibility with the guests. Once you have all those three, the podcast pretty much, quote, sells itself. Let's talk about the compatibility aspect. Compatibility between guests means that the style of the guest doesn't have to be identical, but the understanding has to be there that the communication flow needs to go a different direction than what you might be used to, right? If I'm talking to somebody who speaks slower, I'm going to adjust my delivery speed so that I can meet their delivery speed in return. The reason I do that is because I want to make them comfortable. If they're kind of not a fast speaker, but they're a confident speaker, and I can tell that they're able to kind of speak off the cuff like I can do, then I can go to my normal cadence and I can deliver like I normally do because I know that they're able to keep up with me. I used to have an analogy that I was given by, I think it was a mayor or somebody, who taught me how to shake hands. And he specifically said, the handshake is a science, it's an art, and many people don't understand how important it is to know how to shake somebody's hand because so many don't know how. Shaking somebody's hand is a test. When you're about to shake someone's hand and your hands come together, you need to apply enough pressure to meet them halfway. Don't over squeeze their hand and don't come off like, as Vince McMahon might say, oh, limp fish, pal. You need to meet them halfway and your squeeze needs to be enough that it's a somewhat of a rigid squeeze, but not squeezing and breaking their hand and not a limp fish type squeeze. I've had people that don't know how to shake hands. It's clear they don't know how to shake hands. They've never taught how to do it because either they're trying to break my hand and then I got to meet them in the middle and they may be stronger than me, or they're limp fish. And I had somebody who allegedly was a supervisor who shook my hand and it was limp fish. And it has nothing to do with gender. But in this case, this particular person who's a supervisor who was a female is limp fish, but yet her subordinates, who were all female, were very good, solid, rigid handshakers. So that told me there's a science to shaking hands and meeting people halfway, and then it creates a connection. Communication is a similar type of thing. If you're communicating with somebody who speaks like you do, it's easier to have a back and forth. The friend that I talked about that I believe I'd like to have on the show at some point, he's a very perfect example of how that can work because he speaks very similar to me. He is slower in cadence, but his communication style overall is very similar to mine, where I believe it would be a good back and forth. The other person I talked about that didn't want to be on the show, I believe he has a slower cadence, but he's educated. He's very well educated and he speaks very well, which means I think we would have bounced very well. And then there's others where I think we could have adjusted our communication on the show in order to meet halfway. This is hard to find though, especially if they're people that you have not known for a long time. It's hard to find people that you can communicate with on your level. And I think people, when there is on podcasts or in real life, when there is some sort of a disconnect where it's just not clicking, part of that is just one side's not trying. Could be both are not trying, but chances are it's one side's not trying to meet the other halfway. Either somebody's trying to dominate the conversation, right? You're just loud and boisterous and you just over communicate the other person, or somebody's too passive and they're too quiet or they're too singular in their messaging, or they're heavily scripted. They have to prepare. There's nothing wrong with preparing, but I do think you have to separate your notes from your delivery. You have to be able to communicate independently because we believe that you're an educated person and we believe that you should be able to communicate that way because here's the truth. I'm no different than you. I'm not more intelligent than you. There's no such thing. The truth is I've perfected, I believe, the art of disseminating information, to put a better term, disseminating information to an audience, whether that's a written reading audience or it's a listening audio recorded audience. Doesn't really matter. That's something that I've worked over time, though. It didn't happen initially. It didn't happen overnight. And to be fair, working call center helped a lot, because that's what you have to do. You have to learn how to communicate on the fly. You can't just prep when calls are flowing in at you. And many people didn't get that opportunity. But I do think it's important to me to have the experience and take the time, however the technique, right, is to stand in front of the mirror and do it, or whatever you need to do to get to the point where you don't need notes. Then you can talk about not needing PowerPoint slides and everything else when you're in the workplace. That's the segue over into today's story. So hopefully that has been informational and you stuck with me this long because it was a perfect segue. I had a story in mind, but I needed to set a preface and tie it into getting guests on the show, finding the right guest, making sure that I can communicate and mastering the art of bouncing off them such that I don't need notes. I don't need to prepare. I don't need a script. Here's my story. I'm sure that some of you at some point have gone into a meeting or have hosted a meeting or have gone to a conference or have attended some sort of live virtual event where PowerPoint slides were in use, or it could have been Keynote if you're on it using a Mac. Regardless, there's slides put up on the screen. And then what happens? Invariably, somebody is going to be reading off the darn slide deck, and it drives me nuts. I can't stand it. I will refuse to sit through it if I see people doing that, or I'll mute it because it's a waste of time. The reason this bothers me is because it's misusing this tool, PowerPoint, Keynote, whatever. These tools are brilliant tools for what they do, but you need to understand their purpose. Their purpose is to basically support you as the speaker. You as the speaker are supposed to be the star of the show. That means that you're not supposed to be reading from it, because we all can read it. If you are providing this conference for people who are visually impaired, that's probably a different thing. You want to be able to read the materials so that they can receive it. But if you're talking to a regular conference and none of the people are visually impaired, then why are you reading off the slide deck? Because at that point, we don't need you. So this is a pet peeve of mine, and I see it happen a lot. I don't understand it. I do understand it, but I don't understand why it's still a thing. Let me clarify. Because think about it. Why do I need you up in the front of the room, wasting my time, knowing that we can probably read faster than you can talk, number one. Number two, if your information is crap, which maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but if your information is crap, that means you're reading crap. That means you're not, your whole reputation is being trashed because you're reading crap. Because you didn't realize that your information was crap going in, and you said in your mind you just read out the slide deck. And that's why I don't like it, because you need to condition your messaging around your audience. So I like to see people, and this is the way I do it, and anybody that's watched me present, I presented at a conference back in 2018. Anybody that's watched me present knows my style and how it works. I do not read off the slide deck. I will talk to you. And the slide deck is there to support me as a visual aid. That's its primary purpose, and that's its best purpose. But I'm there to talk, and I'm there to convince you that I am credible and I know what I'm talking about. I may look at the slide deck so I can get a key. That's why it's called Keynote, as to which bullet that I'm specifically talking about. But I'm not going to sit there reading off of it, because I know you can read. And if you can't read it, then no problem. I will be glad to read it for you if you're visually impaired. But if I'm in a room and they're not visually impaired, I'm not going to read it, because that's a waste of your time. And I want to make sure that you receive my messaging. That is the predominant messaging and the gain of credibility. So I do this conference. And here's the thing. The way they did the conference, they wanted people to talk about, okay, you're working at that company, and for that company, tell us what you did at that company. And I'm saying, no, I've been doing this for 16 years at that point, 15, 16 years. I want to talk about the totality of my experience, because that's where they're going to get the value. That's where the people that are listening are going to want to know. They don't care about what happened there. It doesn't matter, because they're not in that vertical market. And I'm fighting the host, you know, the broker as it is. And finally, I get them to relent. They say, as long as you acknowledge you're from the company, as long as you talk about some of the stuff there, then fine, which still isn't what I want, but fine. And they place me in the groups. So basically they have groups of presenters separated by vertical market, which drives me nuts. I know why they did it, is because they assumed that, okay, if you're in banking, you're going to go to a banking presentations. And if you're in real estate, you're going to go to real estate. Well, that's not how they work. People want to hear about problems solved, and they want to hear about messaging that resonates to them. So as long as my topic is what they want to hear, they're going to come to that presentation regardless of what vertical I'm in. It doesn't matter. If I'm able to save $50,000, who cares if I did it in the banking industry, or I did it in real estate, or I did it in construction, or I did it in government? It's a savings of $50,000. If I want to save $50,000, I'm going to listen to that message regardless. So I know this, but I can't get the broker to understand this. Fine. So then we place it there, but then I make the title as generic as I can, so I can appeal to people to say, no, you can come to this. It doesn't matter that you're a bank out in Florida, who cares? You can still come here. Don't worry about the fact that I work in this org over here. It doesn't matter. So I start the presentation and people are filing in and it's a pretty darn packed room. I'm very surprised how many people I got, but it means my title was pretty spot on. And I'm starting my, I get set up on the hardware, test all the hardware, everything's fine, and start the presentation. Now this presentation, just to be clear, my goal with this, the purpose, the reason that I wanted to do this was I wanted to tell people you can save money with this product, but you need to know how to do it, you need to have the right people to do it, you need to make sure you have the right understanding of what the tool is. At the end of the day, if you have that, you will save money. That was my predominant message. So I'm going through the spiel, and I think it's pretty clean. Now, the challenge I faced, I did a Slido exercise. If you don't know Slido, it's SLI.do. And basically, you can spin up a quiz, a quick quiz or survey on the fly, and then you can interact it with what you're doing in your presentation so that you're engaging with your customer, right? Because you don't want to be just rattling off to people. You don't want to just talk to them. You want to engage with them when you're presenting up in front of a room. You want them to feel like they're part of it. Keeps them awake, keeps them aware, keeps them focused. So I do the Slido exercise. And the Slido exercise asks one question. Now, in the slide prior, and this is what I'm talking about with visual aid and how you can sell in presentation. And just to be clear, the reason that I chose to have this conversation and have this dialogue about on this episode is because my guest next week, I think he does a great job very similarly in how he's able to communicate and sell it. And I wanted to tie the story in because I thought it was a very funny story as well. So I'm creating this big narrative about presentation, communication, confidence, selling yourself, etc. So I did the Slido exercise after a slide that had openly said, I wrote my first line of code when I was this age. So all that's all I said. Because my goal, I didn't talk about it, I didn't focus on it. My goal was to see, test, that they are actually reading the slide deck and that they're listening to me. That's the test. So now I did the Slido, which is really the test. And I say, how old do you think I am? That's all I asked. Here's the problem where I got frustrated. I had, four. Four people who work with me, who have worked with me for at least 2 years. I think it was 3 years at this point, who have worked with me fail that test. They failed it. And the reason they failed it, not because they didn't read, I know that's the reason why, but not just because of that. They failed it because they made an assumption because they worked with me for so long and they looked at me and said, well, he's got to be that. And I gave ranges, right? But the way I did the ranges, there's no way you should have got it wrong. Like it was nearly impossible unless you just simply weren't listening to me at all. So now I'm like, okay, my own peers who I've worked with for years did not get this right and they should have got it right. Okay, what does that mean? Everybody else in the room got it perfectly. And I asked the question, you know, I'm seeing the vast majority of you got the answer right. How did you know that? And people said, well, because on the slide before you told us that you first wrote code at this and based simple math, you can only have been this slot. That's how I positioned the slots. That means you could not have gotten it wrong if you read the freaking slide deck and did make assumptions. Now I'm disappointed in my own peers, regardless. So now I transition into, okay, so basically you read something I gave you, you listened to something I told you, and that basically answered the question for you. Awesome, let's keep going. It was a perfect transition, right? My delivery's flawless. The PowerPoint slides did what I wanted to do to the point that I was so energized by it. I ran a little bit over time, but by the end of it, I had tons of people come up and say, no, this is the best presentation at the freaking show because you actually gave us tangible information, tangible numbers, and your delivery was great and you did everything to engage the audience. Everybody else's is boring. It's either a sales pitch or something else, or it doesn't answer our questions. Now I know that I got the key. I understand I can give the message. I just have to be a little bit creative about how I do it. And if I've never worked with these people, they're more likely to listen. That means I should be able to close additional deals. So I get one lady from Florida and she says, you know, I need somebody like you. Of course, I'm working at a company, but I'm open to opportunities. I'm not turning it down. And I said, no problem. Just add me as a contact. We had a little contact tool they gave us and add me as a contact and let's talk. And she's like, no, I really, really need you. I said, no problem. Add me as a contact. Let's talk. Never heard back from her. I tried to reach back to her. Never heard back. So no problem, because I suspect what she was assuming is I was blowing her off, and I wasn't. I need to add her as a contact because I'm trying to get your phone number so we can talk, so we can close whatever you're trying to do. I'm not going to just take, you know, unless you have an offer letter written up, I'm not going to take it right on the fly. Fast forward, right? And I have my presentation. I have it. I posted it on LinkedIn because there was somebody that asked me for it. And I have the presentation. And I have a bunch of people who are chiming in. And they're saying, you know, this is great. How come we don't, how come Hyla doesn't prepare this or broadcast it? Because they usually will post the information after the fact. And I said, well, because chances are they don't like that I put numbers in it, actual dollar figures. I didn't give anything that was proprietary. I said, for me, we spent X to do Y. We didn't talk about tools. We didn't talk about any of that. We just said, it took us X to do Y. It was the savings of Z. It's all my information because of experience. With the vendor, they say, well, no, we don't want to divulge necessarily how much somebody could, because that allows us to, that limits us from raising prices, which is what they're trying to do. So, okay, no problem. I don't have an issue with this. Fast forward now. And I'm in a class, and it's basically a class that's for, it's for a thing that I'm starting to do. And first thing this guy does is he pulls up the PowerPoint, and this dude is reading. Now, if you know the Bueller dude, he sounds just like that, but he's reading off the PowerPoint slide deck. And it was all I could do to not cuss this guy out, because it was after what I was doing, to have to be subjected to this nonsense just drove me absolutely insane. And again, I'm not telling you to snap off or doing that stuff. I'm saying that the art of delivery on presentation is it's a challenge. It's science, and you have to kind of work at it, but everybody can do it eventually once you get to that flow. Number one, please, please, please don't just read off the PowerPoint. The PowerPoint is there to be a visual aid to support what you're talking about. You should always have commentary. You should always be talking, and you should be engaging with eye contact, which I'll talk about on a different episode, with your audience to make sure that you are the one that they're focused on, not the slide deck. The slide deck supports what you're doing, but they're here to listen to you. They're here to listen to your message and take your message back with calls to action. So that's number one. Number two, if you're ever in a presentation and they're reading off the PowerPoint slide deck, you got to ask yourself and really analyze, well, why. Why do they do that? Because they never prepared. They don't know what to do. They don't know what to say. They're not prepared to talk to you. They didn't take the time to prepare. Why not? Because they don't think they need to. Chances are they're doing it in bulk, or they're just the kind of person who just slaps stuff against the wall and hopes it sticks. I question whether those people really care, right, about you, because they're not giving you material and they're not engaging with you. They're just wasting your time because you can read just as well as they can. So I'm not telling you not to attend those. Like, I don't attend. I just get up and leave. I'm saying I want you to critically think. Your call to action is to critically think the next time you're stuck in something and they're reading off a PowerPoint slide deck, why they do this. Why is it that people feel the need to just read off a PowerPoint slide deck? And consider, yes, you can read yourself. Then think about, what is your first inclination? Your first inclination is probably to pull out your phone and start flipping through it because you're bored and you realize, I read it already. I don't need to hear this. And I just got to sit through this nonsense. And it's a waste of your time. You may not be in a position to really do anything about it, but you can at least think, just process. Why are we being subjected to this? And why are people not able to really present like they're supposed to? If you've ever watched any of the TED Talks, the vast majority of them do not read off slide decks. And the reason is because they know that they have to present the message and they're communicating to you. I'm not a fan of TED Talks. I think they're overrated. But my point is, you know, again, think about why people stand up in front of a room, a bunch of people, and just read off something that you can read yourself and call that a presentation. You know it's a waste of your time. You know that you're basically being time wasted by somebody and you have no authority in some cases. Why do they do that? Because they don't respect your time. Because they don't respect your time and they don't acknowledge your skill and they don't acknowledge your competency. They don't acknowledge that you already know how to read. They don't acknowledge your time. So my takeaway here for you is to think about it. Just think about it next time you're in the situation. Really stop and think about why this is happening. And I think you'll realize they don't respect your time. They don't respect your competency. They couldn't, because if they did, they wouldn't do that. They're dictating to you. They're in that power position. They're feeling like they need to talk down to you by way of reading Bueller type situations in front of the room, because they don't think much of you. And that's not the way we should be. All the way, I'm talking all the way up the chain, whether CEO or whatever, anybody that does that doesn't think much of you. And that's not the society we should be in. In the workplace, we should not support this. And I know we do, but we should. We should get back to a world where we're able to respect everybody in that room, respect their sensibilities. Don't treat them like children. Say, no, I'm not going to read off the deck. You can read it yourself. Here is the message I'm trying to communicate to you. If you have questions, let's talk about those and have a conversation. Other than that, I don't need to sit and dictate to you. I hope, I sincerely hope that today's episode has been entertaining. And I'm really excited to have our guest on the show next week. I'll probably have one more episode before week end, just to round stuff up. I got another story to tell. But next week's guest, I'm really excited to talk to him, and I'm hopeful that you're excited to hear from him. This may be, I suspect, the start of some additional listeners coming in at a large scale, because his information, I think, is going to be very compelling for a lot of people. So we will be communicating this out to various social media forums so that he can get the exposure as well. And then we can hopefully have him back on the show on an intermittent basis for more information. And just to kind of preface, his specialty is around valuation, the value of a thing. You've heard me talk about value and being valued. It goes beyond people. Anything that we can think of has some intrinsic value. And how do we determine that value? That's his specialty. That's why I'm excited to talk to him, because if you've heard me, I always question value and making sure that you feel valued, but also everything else has value. And how can we draw some parallel between all value so where we know how to move forward? He's got some very compelling thoughts on those. I also want to talk to him about the pandemic and some of the things that he's been able to identify with success stories. So if that goes through, which he's on the calendar and he seemed pretty excited, that goes through, I think it's a very interesting episode that you definitely don't want to miss.